Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sam, host of Open World, and we are signing on today. Forgive me for a little bit of errors in the beginning. I'm a little bit late today because I realize that there's a time change. Apparently, we in Saskatchewan don't believe in the silliness of time change, but the rest of North America does. So did not realize that we bumped up an hour, and then secondarily, my pin wasn't working properly. So we're hanging out here today. Sad news. My friend Pixie, who was supposed to come today, is not able to come today. But we're going to make it up. We looks like we do have a caller that we're going to chit-chat with, and maybe we'll get some perspective on some new things. Maybe we'll talk about things that aren't usually talked about. Maybe we'll defeat the one world order together. Maybe we'll just do that, you know, and maybe we'll reach some next level consciousness. Who knows today? We're just going to wing it today. Alrighty. Caller, how's it going?
Hi. Okay, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. Well, my name is Richard L. Koenig, and I am generally recognized in Oregon as the guy that knows about the motor vehicle laws. But I will say this. The British Crown and all the countries that they have ever been associated with are similarly inclined as far as travel, as far as highways go, the use of the roads. So what is happening in Oregon is also generally happening in Canada or Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
So just to let you know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not particular to Oregon.
No.
Okay. So I would like to begin. Can I start off with a beginning?
Go for it. We got a whole 3 hours, my friend. Outside of some commercial breaks, if you whatever you want to talk about. I mean, how did you get to where you are? If we're going to go back to some against the grain stuff, like how did you get to where you are? Let's hear your story. Why not? We got time.
Well, this is the first I've heard that this is a three-hour show. Is this a three-hour show?
This is a whole three-hour show.
Wow. Okay.
So you can just stay for as long as you want. If you want to stay the next hour, we're good. If you want to stay for 2 hours, we're good. If you want to stay for the whole three, we good. We good, brother.
Okay. Well, how did I get here? A friend of mine just called, 10 minutes ago and said you were looking for somebody to help you out tonight, and that's tonight. And how did I get there? How did I get there? A long time ago, I started getting, I was actually associated with Legislative Council, the attorney for the legislative body of Oregon, right? And I hung out with him for 7 to 8 years until he retired. I met him at the very beginning of the revision of the Oregon Vehicle Code in early 1983. So he helped me get where I am today. He helped me tremendously. I don't know of any other human being who can say they are as aware of the motor vehicle laws as he made me aware. So that's part of how I got here. Then after he retired, I met him because I was looking for somebody to help me. I was hoping to save my son from, he was living with a drug dealer, his mom and was living with a drug dealer, and I was involved with family court, and I knew that the family court was not a place where I could succeed. So I went down to the state capitol and met with Tom Clifford. He was the legislative council back in those days. And I got help from him in regard to that. But after he retired, I continued on that path of family court. I continued as a father's rights kind of advocate. And that went up until the point where a Department of Justice spokesperson named John Ellis was talking to a legislative committee about equal protection under the law. And what he was saying is, last year, last legislative session, you gave us the authorization to suspend driver licenses. And this year, equal protection under the law requires you to pass a law that allows us to suspend the licenses of doctors, architects, landscapers, and other professionals. And I'm thinking, oh, that's what Tom was talking about all those years. Oh, okay, I understand now exactly what he was trying to tell me. I didn't really have the time to listen to him talk about the motor vehicle laws during those years. I heard him, and I learned a lot, but I did not ever get the full picture until this event. And when he said equal protection under the law means you have to do the same thing to doctors, architects, landscapers, and other professionals as we get to do to drivers, it all came together. So that was another instance of how I got to this point. And then I started actually learning, investigating, reading case law, reading the statutes, and interviewing legislators, and getting my car stolen. I finally stopped using tags, registration tags on my plates. I got a car that didn't have them, and I didn't bother to put them on, and I lost that car to a cop. And he couldn't tell me why. And I go, what? Okay. But I knew that he was wrong. I knew that he couldn't tell me. Okay. And then I lost another car, and over the years I've lost four or five. But and it's such a huge conspiracy. I have to say that. And if you're interested in this, or you have any, is this a conspiracy show? I mean, you talk about things like that, or what's the orientation of the show?
The orientation of the show. So my show is called Open World. At some point when I do live streaming, you will be seeing me in some cosplay. My previous shows were Against the Grain. I did interview people to get their stories from where they were to how they are now and just kind of get their feeling of their expertise. Now I have rebranded my show to be called Open World, and it's a video game concept where there are no borders. Everything goes kind of thing. People come and go as they please. We kind of chat about things as we please. I talk about personally everything from natural childbirth to alternative health remedies, to conspiracy theories, to politics, to, like we're talking about now, sovereignty, because I am outside of the system myself personally. I have no government-issued ID. I live entirely without government-issued ID. I do not have licensing, all that other stuff. So I am very interested to see other people when they are talking about these kinds of things to kind of see where their perspective is and what they've been doing that works for them. And, you know, because there's no one way to skin a cat. That's what's really nice. And when it comes to practicing law, there is no really legal license to practice law. There's just the bar, which is the club, which is a bunch of people who are all in cahoots to represent you and hook you into their game, thinking that you're just a dummy because you can't understand their language when legalese is an entirely other language. So it's super fun having people like you on the show to talk about their experiences and where they came from and, like, your area that is like, you know, this is what I've experienced and this is what I've seen that's worked, this is what I've seen that haven't worked. Side note, if you're interested in these things, I strongly encourage you to check out on Facebook Tactical Sovereignty. My friend Brian Parker runs that group, and every Sunday, I don't remember what time, but every Sunday they also have a radio show on TalkShoe. Tactical Sovereignty. You should check it out if you're super hardcore into this stuff. If you don't know Brian Parker, go find his group and join his radio shows on Sundays. Dude is super knowledgeable, super friendly, and he has a big heart. You'll love Brian.
Okay, Brian Parker. I'll note that. Okay. So in about 2003, I began to think about, well, what if I just start asking the simplest, most fundamental question, like, what is a driver? Everybody thinks of themselves as a driver. I don't know. Mm-hmm. How about in Saskatchewan? Is that a common idea?
Same thing. You betcha.
Okay.
Everybody drives. Okay. Everybody's a person. Everybody uses transportation. Like you said, most certainly same thing across the board. It's a wonderful thing. The UCC is the world, the same damn thing.
It is. It is the same mm-hmm. damn thing. And it's thousands of years old. It's been evolving for forever. It's far beyond anything that the British have ever put together, way
mm-hmm.
before that. Anyway, so I thought, what if I ask a legislator from the Transportation Committee to tell me what a driver is? So I bothered a friend of mine, a senator on the Transportation Committee, and I said, can you help me find the legislative definition of a driver? And he said,
mm-hmm.
oh, yeah, no problem. And he didn't know what he was talking about. He had been on that committee for some years already, but he had never actually thought about it. He thought he understood, but he was, and my friend Tom Clifford, the legislative counsel, he told me, he said, attorneys have this program where they're trying to convince people that they are persons. And
mm-hmm.
and he said people are so stupid that they agree with that. They end up
mm-hmm.
and at the outset I thought he was talking about people on the street, but only people that Tom Clifford associated with and knew were the legislators. And so he was talking about the legislators are actually the stupid people. And that didn't hit me for years. It took me years to figure that out. Okay, but so I'm talking to this gentleman who's a farmer, and farmers aren't subject to the motor vehicle laws because they don't haul for hire. They haul their own stuff that they've grown to market. But
mm-hmm.
so they're not subject to the licensing laws. But he thought he was. He actually thought he was subject to. And so he said, yeah, I've got a new attorney, and I'm sure he'll be able to help you. Just contact him. So I did. And this guy said, you have to go to your own senator to get that information. And I go, what? She's never been on the Transportation Committee. Why should I go to her? And
mm-hmm.
Her name was Senator Kate Brown. And have you ever heard of that, Senator Kate Brown, or Governor? Anyway.
I have not heard of Senator Kate Brown.
Okay. Well, she started out as a state – I met her when she was actually just out of law school. And I sat down with her, and I thought, well, maybe we can do something together. Maybe we'll, put something together. But
mm-hmm.
within 2 minutes of sitting down with her, I realized, oh, my God, this gal is never going to be my friend. She's never going to help
mm-hmm.
me. And in all the years that we knew each other, this was in the early 1980s, we were always on the opposite sides of every bill. Everything we ever argued, we were on the opposite side. And so at this point, I'm asking this attorney, I'm saying, well, why should I talk to my senator when she's never been a friend of mine and she doesn't know anything about transportation? Why should I ask her? And he said, you have to. And so it ended up, I wrote her a letter and I said, okay, I'm asking you to help me find the legislative definition of driver. And she didn't want to do that. She wouldn't respond. Mm-hmm. It took months for her to do anything. And finally, one of the letters I wrote to her over a period of several months, I gave her the history of the motor vehicle laws in Oregon. And I think that probably blew her mind when she saw that. Mm-hmm. And that really pissed her off. But then we ended up together. She and I ended up at a rally in front of the city hall in Portland, Oregon, because a neighbor of ours was murdered by the cops at a routine mm-hmm. traffic stop. Wow. Mm. And so I asked her, I said, when are you going to be able to send me this information that I've asked for so this kind of thing won't happen again? And she mm-hmm. wouldn't answer and stood behind people. She kept moving around behind different groups of people and trying to get away from me. And I let her go. But then she got this single contact. She said, I saw Richard one time in the last 7 years. Oh, but the stalking order requires repeated contact within 2 years. Okay. And then she said, and nothing that I wrote in this petition caused me any alarm. And that doesn't work either because, of course, if you're being stalked, you're afraid for your well-being, your peace, safety, and happiness. And so she didn't qualify. And she was on the committee, by the way, that wrote the stalking law, that got the stalking law on the books when she was starting out as a state rep. That's what the committee she was on. So she knew. Anyway, she got this single contact alarm stalking order against me in 2004. And it's still on me. And this is now we're at 2023. So that's like, I don't know, 18 years or so. She got it in May, so it'll be a long time. And it's still happening. But the next year she went to the legislative administrator, the guy that's in charge of the state capitol, right? And she said, I don't want Richard to come around here and talk to anybody about the things that he's been studying. So ban him from the capitol. And there is a law. There is a law that allows that, but it doesn't work like she implied that it should to the legislative administrator. Actually, it says that the governor will be consulted with the Oregon State Police and the administrator of the public property, and he will publish a declaration. A declaration as essentially a sworn statement about who's going to be excluded and why. And there are three reasons why. One is danger to persons, the other is a danger to property, and the third one is someone is hindering ingress or egress from the public property, in this case, the state capitol. And none of those were mentioned in the letter to me that said, don't come around here or we're going to arrest you. Oh, okay. So that's another reason why I'm here today. The closest thing that met those criteria was the stalking order, except that she said in her stalking order that nothing that she wrote in that stalking order caused any alarm. So it wasn't even a threat to persons. And it's a felony. It's a felony to do that. It's a felony to write something that simulates civil or criminal process. So she committed a felony, and no one would prosecute her for that. I slept. I camped out on the doorstep of the prosecutor in the county where we were both from. I guess the whole time, you know, from the beginning. So that's been close to 20 years, 18 plus years. Anyway, that's been underlying everything else that I've learned. But it also has been the cause of my repeated arrest. I keep calling the Legislative Assembly and trying to figure out how stupid they actually are, or if they're intelligent enough to learn, or do they want to keep their oath of office? Do they want to honor the people? And here, are you aware? I mean, can you tell me what the Constitution of Saskatchewan is about? You know that?
The Constitution of Saskatchewan? We do not have a Constitution. The closest thing that we have here is a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And, like, you know, that comes from, like, you know, kind of a branch off. Like, we had the BNA Act, and then we had the Charter on Rights and Freedoms brought in 86, which essentially allowed Canada to make their own legislations, because before that, we had the Queen and everybody writing their legislations and then pushing that onto Canada. And then after the Charter, we had our own parliament. We did our own things. However, you know, we write our own legislations, but then we have the Queen still give royal assent. So people think that the Queen is just a figurehead. The Queen is not just a figurehead. The Queen is the corporation soul of Canada. And if you look at any sort of piece of legislation and anywhere across Canada, especially on the federal level, it all has to be given royal assent by the Crown. I mean, the Queen's dead now, so it's the King, I guess. But it all has to be given royal assent by the Crown. Even like the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, they are basically, I mean, I hate to say it, but they're kind of like bullshit compared to the United States and their actual constitution, because, like, here we don't even have, like, really gun rights, one could say, because way back in the day, the Crown decided that they didn't want the Indigenous people to have guns because, you know, with what they were pulling with the reserves and what they were going to pull with the reserves, and after they went in and took a bunch of the land and lied about the treaties and pulled a bunch of dirty shit with the Statute of Westminster and all this other stuff, they essentially took all the guns away from the Indigenous people, but they kind of underhandedly took the guns away from everybody, but they let all of, you know, their Crown people and, like, the French and stuff, they let all the immigrants and stuff have their guns, but they took them away from the Indigenous people. And now when they're starting to take, when Trudeau's been doing these gun takeaways slowly, because they're saying, oh, we're going to take away the assault weapons, and then everybody was okay with that because we don't want assault weapons in Canada. What is an assault weapon? But whatever, you know, let's fucking really dive into that, which is total bullshit. Excuse my language, but I'm starting to get irritated just thinking about this. But going forward, you know, then they started taking away, like, you know, like all these other guns, and now they're looking to take away your shotguns and things, like your hunting rifles and your shotguns, and everybody's like, excuse me, but, you know, you said you weren't going to do this, but again, the government does what it wants, and when you look at legislation, like I was just talking about, like with this Bill C-11, I'll let you get back to your point here in a second, but Bill C-11, okay. Now a bunch of TikTok creators are starting to talk about Bill C-11 and how they're going to be censoring even content creators, because content creators were okay with C-11 so long as they left them alone. But on top of now, they're starting to censor searches because Google's already said that they're starting to censor searches in Canada. Now they're starting to determine what you can and cannot say as a content creator. And if you know, it's starting to get crazy. Up to and including, allegedly, you know, determining, like, making you provide government-issued ID to determine your age in order to be able to access things like websites like Twitter and Reddit. You know, it's getting absolutely wild that, like, you know, someone like me, where I don't have government-issued ID, I might not be allowed access to the Internet, to social media platforms in the very near future. Things like Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, TikTok, all these other things where, like, if they push this through with the current verbiage that they have right now, I might be cut off from the Internet. That's going to be a big deal. you know? And it's just like, you know, they're doing this, and it's like, it's getting absolutely wild. I had a point to this. Now I don't remember my point. But, yeah, you know, it's like, that's just the government where they're coming up with this kind of stuff, and they're acting crazy. So we don't really have a whole lot of charter rights and freedoms. I mean, we do, but, like, the government does whatever it wants, especially with the Freedom Convoy, you know, when they push Article 1 where they can, you know, notwithstanding clause and all this other crazy stuff. Anyway, I had a bunch of points that I just, like, got lost on, so I'm going to hand it back to you here.
Well, I heard that Mr. Trudeau is losing his popularity and that people are talking about rousting him from office. Is that happening?
So we were
in Oregon.
That would be ideal. I'm not going to lie. Not saying that I'm like, you know, I want to, you know, have like a, you know, June 6th or whatever, in case anybody's listening, you know, like I'm not calling for violence, but if violence happened against these people to maybe put them in their place at the same time, I wouldn't try and stop it either because this is getting ridiculous. That's what I wanted to say. Wetaskiwin versus Willie Littlechild. Back in like the 80s or 90s or whatever, there was Wetaskiwin, an area, they voted Willie Littlechild as the first Indigenous MP. And then after he got voted in, they brought in GST, and his constituents, like three-quarters of his people that voted him in didn't want GST, and he went ahead and pushed it anyway. And the people of Wetaskiwin actually sued Willie Littlechild, and this is what I've been telling these people in B-Cell 11, and all these people that are complaining and whining that the government isn't listening to them. It was actually ruled in court by the judge that, or justice or whatever, that the government does not have to listen to your MPs. They do not legally have to listen to you because they are acting on your best interest, and they are not beholden to have to listen to you in order to be able to do their job. They only have to listen to Parliament. So you have this Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms that essentially allows the government to do whatever it wants, and if you're outside of the system, it also lets you do whatever you want, but if you're a citizen, you're practically hooped. So then the government just does whatever it wants, and it enacts whatever clauses it wants because it simply can, and your only remedy is to vote in somebody else. It's absolutely wild. There is no due process here in Canada. And just like, you know, the issue that you were dealing with federal, let me tell you a story, good sir. I have a friend. His name is Mika. You can check out his website, sovereign-truth.com, okay? He has been dealing with the cops, stealing his cars. He travels without a license, blah, 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 blah. You know, he's even made front page news in Ontario for being a freeman on the land, okay? Okay. He knows what he's talking about. Dude is extremely knowledgeable. Dude knows what he is talking about, and he has the experience to boot. Anyway, the last time they stole his truck or van or whatever in BC, he just decided, you know, enough is enough, and he decided to take these people to court, persons to court. And after the running around that they did with him, when he was supposed to appear in court with them, okay, they refused to accept his information to be admitted on the docket, okay. They refused to accept, through registered mail, his evidence for court until after his court date was over. They, on the record, no, it doesn't, because they committed a federal crime refusing to accept his evidence to put into court. And then after they accepted it, they gave a verbal acceptance. They didn't sign off. They verbally accepted it. They literally committed a federal offense, an indictable offense, here in Canada, on for the record, and who's going to hold them to account? Nobody. Because the whole justice system is completely messed up in both the United States and Canada. You cannot get justice in a system that is run by blatant corruption.
That's true.
It's disgusting.
That's true. And that's what I'm experiencing. And the difference between what I'm experiencing and what my predecessors have experienced and what my predecessors intended for all of us to experience is this. I mean, we have an Article 1, Section 1 of the Oregon Constitution that says this. It says, we declare that all men, when they form a social compact, are equal in right, that all power is inherent in the people, that all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness, and they have at all times a right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such manner as they may think proper. That's the opening line of our Oregon Constitution. And it doesn't work anymore. It's just written there. But anyway, I keep telling people that I am one of the people in whom all power is inherent, and I'm a member of the statewide General Assembly, the Oregon Statewide General Assembly, and this is an assembly of people who we stand together, you know, and we all believe in this Article 1, Section 1 language, and we have enough different individuals that we can actually compose a group known as the people. And we've talked about that. I mean, within the group, how many folks do you think it would be that it would take to have all the power? I'm asking you.
How many folks do you have I think that it would take to have all the power?
Yeah. It says all
powers inherent. Well, isn't that a good question? Because back in like the revolution, that's all it took was 3%. But unfortunately, we have more than 3% of people now who know that something is amiss. And I'm going to say this in a very harsh manner. So trigger warning, if you're listening, I'm talking about you, bro. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people now that are cowards. They're cowards. Because the minute you stick your neck out, look at what happened with that lady, what's her name? I can't remember her bloody name. She was the one who was like Tamara Litch or whatever her name in Canada when she was doing the Freedom Convoy. Look at how they've held her as a political prisoner. Look at how they held her. You know, there's power in numbers, and like we most certainly in Canada had way more than 3% of people who recognized that what the government was doing with their federal mandates, with the vaccines, they recognized and they realized that was very, very wrong. But when it actually came down to push comes to shove, everybody's bank accounts got shut down, and where was the outrage? Everybody gets mad at people like Antifa because Antifa will come up with, you know, Molotov cocktails and beat some ass. But, you know, Antifa and these people, you know, BLM, everybody was mad that BLM was, you know, rocking the streets and they were getting stuff done. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a big fan of how they did it. But the fact of the matter is people went and did it. They went and did it. And now most people want to sit on their butts on their computer, whine and complain that these things are going on. But at the same time, they're not willing to do anything about it, like you said yourself. You know, how do you hold these people to account when there's no ability to hold them account in justice? And again, I'm not calling for violence, but if enough people stand up and, like, you know, if it takes 3%, we most certainly have more than that by a long run. But if it's like, you know, 20%, if 20% of people stand up and say, you know what, I'm going to civilly resist, and if you guys don't do something about this, we're going to do something about this, you know? But you got to have due justice. You got to have due justice. You can't just go start burning people's houses down, because that's not how it works either. That's how you get chaos. But anyway, I'll hand that back to you.
Okay. Well, let me say something about the number of people that it takes to get things done. 3% is probably a realistic figure for the revolution, but...
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about individuals in a particular political situation. It could be a local political situation. How many individuals would it take to constitute the people? And the the number that we've come up with, the statewide General Assembly, is five people. So we have more than that. We have several hundred of different people all over the state and all over the union. Actually, we're reaching out. We're trying to get people from all over the United States to, and it's not 50 states, by the way. And this is a big deal. When are you aware of the U.S. history that came down around the Civil War, the Civil War? Remember our 1860s war between the South and the North? Okay,
yep.
So when South Carolina walked out of Congress, you know, abandoned us, that was the end of Congress. That was the legitimate end of Congress. And nothing that they've done since then. And it just so happened that Oregon was the last state before South Carolina walked out to be admitted to the Union. So Oregon is the 33rd state, and there cannot be any other states. So we're dealing with 33 other states and asking them to come back together into a quorum so that we can then admit other states, all the other states, to the Union. So that's an ongoing project of this group called the Oregon Statewide General Assembly. But anyway, I have access to any number of them that I need. And they, by the way, they have routine juries. They will call a grand jury, and the grand jury will issue an indictment and hand it to a petite jury, and the petite jury will have a trial. And we have had a number of trials so far, but we have not had enforcement potential. But now we are working on recruiting, and we have several people that we refer to as marshals. We have several marshals who are, they've even published a book on what they do. So we're working toward our goal. Our stated goal is to restore the Republican form of government, which was guaranteed by the Constitution for every state. And that's what we're all about, is restoring a Republican form of government. Anyway, this group of people, potentially, and they found the governor. They found Governor Kate Brown guilty of screwing with me, guilty of the felony, simulating legal process. And so this court, the grand jury and the petite jury, we are the only constitutionally appropriate Article 3, Section 7 court, that's the U.S. Constitution, in the United States. We're the only ones. The rest of them have been done away with because of the state of martial law that was imposed by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with it, but hearing that honestly doesn't surprise me because, you know, anytime there's war, you're going to impose that stuff just so you can take over all the army and the control the resources and blah, blah, blah.
And that has been ongoing to the time when we, the members of the Oregon Statewide General Assembly, said we are reestablishing an Article 3, Section 7 court, which is a court that is capable, competent to sue the government, where the people can sue the government. That is, we don't there is no other legitimate Article 3, Section 7 court in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that that will be helpful in my dealings with the DMV. But the DMV, they're crooked as hell, and I'm sure that Canada is probably working with a lot of the same people or under the same people. Do you have any basic ideas on that? Can you say yes or no to that?
What, that Canada is crooked?
That their DMV, that their Driver and Motor Vehicle Services organization is crooked.
Oh, yeah, ask my friend Mika. That's why he ended up dealing with this to begin with, because even though he has it listed, even though that he's been sovereign for however freaking, 10-plus years, more than, it's probably like, you know, a decade and a half now, they'll still take his freaking car, they'll still take his truck. I mean, he made the news, for fuck's sake. Like, you know, they know who he is. He's in their system as a leave him alone, because he went to jail for, 28 days or something as a political prisoner? He went to jail so that they could figure out who he was. They know who he is. They'll still take his stuff once in a while. They'll still do it. You get a crappy cop on a crappy day, and they'll just take your crap and they'll take and sell it on you. You know? And then they're going to keep you out of court. Because this is the thing. When they bring you to court, they want to bring you to court in a capacity that they want to be able to contract with you. If you try to take them to court in your own capacity, they're going to do every possible thing they can to keep you out of court. Because as soon as they catch you on and for the record that they're the ones pulling problems, as soon as you catch them, sorry, not they catch you, as soon as you catch them on and for their record that they're the ones causing problems, then you're in trouble. Then they're in trouble, not you, then they're. This is exactly what happened with Michael Obernicia. If you follow Michael Obernicia in the UK, for 10 years he fought with the banks. The Great British Mortgage Swindle, they had him banned from the courts. They would not let him step foot in courts. They thought they had his dad. They thought they had his dad. When they brought his dad in for court to try and take his dad's house away, well, little did they know that Michael has been teaching his dad this whole time, and they actually had to admit on and for the record, otherwise they were going to, perjure themselves or commit something. I don't remember the word for it. There's a word for it. But they basically had to admit that either they had to admit that they were being crooked and they had to start undoing these things, or they had to admit that they were crooked. And, like, the court thought they had Michael's dad between a rock and a hard place. Little did they know that his dad is just as smart as he is, and they got them, boy. And now the things that they have been doing in the UK to start unwinding the mortgages and the fraud that they've committed with that, you know, with the whole dead name and all that other stuff, like, it's just, you know, the dead, whatever the mortgage means, I can't remember the word. But, you know, they've been pulling serious amounts of, like, leeway there. Leeway, serious amounts of leeway. And this is what courts like to do here in Canada, particularly. If they catch you in court in their capacity, they love to rule against you just to send you a letter later on saying forget about it, just so they can get it on and for the record that they got you, just so they can continue to use it. As soon as you get them and their lies on their own record, it's game over. It's game over. And with Mika, they have been trying to screw him around and keep him from going in the courts. They tried calling him at odd times, call him, and then, like, if he didn't answer, then they would, like, you know, issue, like, this is your court date, and they tried doing all, he got them so many times, trying to pull really screwy things. Blatantly screwy things, borderline illegal things, just so that they could keep him out of court acting in his own capacity. And they did, but they had to commit a federal offense doing it. So, but you know what? We're going to take a quick 5-minute break. We're going to take a quickie commercial break. Do you want to come right back after the commercial break?
Sure. Yeah.
Cool.
Thanks.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a quickie commercial break, and we're going to be right back to dive more into this, because this is interesting. I'm loving this conversation. Okay, we'll be right back.
Paul, Where is your letter of recommendation?
Pete to the Corinthians heart on my letter.
Paul, that is utter bull malarkey. Daniel 11:32 through 36 warned us of the one who will deceive with flatteries, saying that we are free from the law. There is a Freedomizer broadcast called Everlasting Covenant Study Free from Paul. It airs from noon to 3 p.m. Pacific, 1 to 4 Mountain, and 2 to 5 Central every Saturday. Join Rachel Hodge 3 to 6 Eastern Saturdays by calling 319-527-6208.
I will not call 319-527-6208, crafty fellow that I am. I should have caught her with trickery.
No chance, Paul. Everlasting Covenant Study Free from Paul airs noon to 3 Pacific on Saturdays.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Salve Coagula.
Salve Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Bible prophecy fulfilled.
Snakes in the grass.
Son of position. We got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast.
I got ya
right where I want ya. Like a raw line in the field, I stalked ya. Creeped up on ya, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on ya. Once I get ya, you'll be a goner.
Can you hear me now?
Hey, just all part of the game.
In the scene with solo, now it's time to open up your eyes. Look at how you're living, just to follow where we're stating.
And the new norms, the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.web.com. That's official, ninjascroll.web.com.
Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared, it's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to WeFunder.com/GroundswellCard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Most people say they hate wearing shoes and would go barefoot if they knew they were allowed. People say it all the time on their social medias. But they are worried that someone will say something to them. So everyone wears the cheapest flip-flops with the least amount of fabric on them. Most people do not even know that it's completely 100% legal to go barefoot into a store. Most people think that driving barefoot is illegal, but it isn't. Driving barefoot actually is safer than wearing most shoes. Going outside barefoot for a walk is one of the healthiest things you could do, but most people are afraid someone will say something. Or they quote the myths and the rumors that their grandma told them years ago. The fact is, there are no laws against driving a car, going to a store, or eating in a restaurant barefoot. So don't give in to bad fashion, hurt heels, or a broken flip-flop. For more information, please check out barefootislegal.org or find us on your favorite social media.
Alrighty, everybody. We are back with Open World. And it's Richard, right? I got your name right.
Yes.
Richard, am I tripping? Okay, cool. Hi, Richard.
And you're Suzanne, right?
Sam. I'm Sam.
Okay. Sam.
Your host, Sam. I like Suzanne, though. That's a cute name. It's awesome. It like, breeds, like, authority, almost. But, like, not like a, like, it's almost like a hippie French lady. I don't know. That's what I think of. But anyway. Okay, we've kind of spent over the last hour talking about sovereignty, talking about, like, how you got to where you are, like, you know, with realizing that the system is kind of crap, that, you know, things need to be done working at this organization. Oregon members, what was it called?
The Oregon Statewide Jural Assembly.
Holy wow, okay, that's why I got it way wrong. You're going to have to give me do you guys have, like, a website or anything?
Yes, there's a website. It's
okay, cool. You're going to have to send that to me, and I can put it in the show description so that other people can, you know, you might be able to get some more members and stuff this way. So when the show is done, send me your link.
Let me just give it to you. Let me just give it to you right now. It's O-R-S-J-A, or Oregon.
O-R-S-J-A.
O-R for Oregon. State.
Okay.
S for state.
Okay.
Jural, J for Jural Assembly, ORSJA.org.
Perfect. You know what? We're going to update the show description right now with your guys' website because we can do that. I'm the boss.
Okay. And I want to say this about, and your friend, you said you had a friend, the guy that's always in trouble over his driving without a license.
Who,
what
Mika?
His name again?
Mika Rosalia. So usually he gets left alone, but once in a while the cops will stop, and he usually just goes and buys another truck or buys another van or whatever. But this one time he decided enough is enough, and he decided to dance with them. And boy, have they've been tiptoeing around, man, because, wow.
Okay. Well, that is this situation that I'm in. Since I've been banned from the state capitol, I've also been told, don't call anybody here. Don't call any legislator or their staff, or you're going to be arrested. And that has happened over and over and over again. But the interesting thing about being arrested is that it doesn't necessarily mean that you get a trial or that you even get arraigned. You know what arraignment is, right? It's the same in Canada. when you go into court, they say, how do you plead, right? And you say, I'm guilty or I'm not guilty or there's no contest. I don't even get arraigned when I get arrested. They just throw me in jail. And then frequently into the state hospital, and on the pretext that they're going to evaluate me to see if I am able to aid and assist in my own defense, right? But they cannot do that. They cannot do that if they don't arraign you. There's no charges. If they don't ask you, are you guilty or not guilty, there are no charges. So you're not defending yourself, so they can't send you to the state hospital to be evaluated for that. But I've been held at the state hospital for as long as 4.5 months, and the maximum time for anybody to go there for the evaluation is for 30 days. So that's kind of, you know, but yeah. And the longest that I was in jail without being arraigned was 300 days. And that was when 4.5 months of it was at the state hospital. But that's how gross this conspiracy is. It's just very out front, very, you know, plain. It's just, there's nothing about it that's right, and it's so obvious, and they don't want me to talk to legislators about it, and that's why they keep on arresting me, because I keep calling them, and one gal, one of my friends, I met her when she was first elected as a state rep because she was elected on a platform of anti-corruption. And that sounded, wow, that's unique. So I met her and we ended up writing a lot of laws together. We spent months just emailing back and forth. You know, she'd print up a bill and I'd go through it and print up my stuff in a different color and send it back. And we'd just go back and forth. And we did that for years. And I asked her at one point, I said, hey, I'm sure that I am banned from the state capitol, but I can't imagine that. Can you check and see if there's a list of people who are banned from the state capitol? And she said, well, I don't know, but I'll try. And she ended up calling me back and said, I found that list, but you are not on it. And I said, well, that sounds more reasonable. And then 5 years ago, I called her again to ask her the same thing, you know, am I on that list now? And at that point, my current warrant of arrest was put out, you know. Now I'm wanted again, and I've been wanted ever since, what, July of 2018. That's how gross it is in Oregon. We just are, you know, it's... And the other thing, the other measure of gross is we have a think tank called Eco Northwest. They are a corporate think tank that is involved with the Legislative Assembly on a biennial basis, and they help do something called the Highway Cost Allocation Study, right, every other year. And they present to the revenue legislative committees and to the transportation committees, and they've told them over and over again that the small motor vehicles, and they don't tell them the truth about, they don't give them an actual, the vehicles that most of us use are called solely for personal use vehicles. Do you know that language? Is that common in Canada? Solely for personal use?
I wouldn't say it's common, but I mean, one can get the gist if they're into sovereignty kind of thing. I just call it a private automobile.
Okay. Well, this is statutory language, and it's used throughout the 50 states that, you know, ostensibly exist. but they don't call them solely for personal use vehicles. They call them the 8,000 pound or less motor vehicles, which are like taxi cabs, theoretically. They are paying 66% of the budget of the DMV, or Oregon Department of Transportation, 66%, and we, the people, are not required to pay any of that. It's all commercial. The user fees are all commercial. So that's another measure of the grossness of this, what we have here. And it's just hard to imagine. But in Oregon, one of the first things that happened was when the Secretary of Commerce, back in 1926, he had a highway safety conference, a national highway safety conference, and he ended up publishing something called the Uniform Vehicle Code. And part of that was the definition of highway. And highway, under that uniform code, was every public way open to the general public for vehicles as a matter of right. And we have that. All the states, every state in the union, including the ones that aren't really states, have that same language today. All of them that I've ever seen. And yet nobody seems to know that. And is that the way it is in Canada? In Saskatchewan?
We kind of have like a thing that like the King's Highways are like free to use kind of thing. Because I remember like you didn't need licenses here for outside of like commercial travel and stuff for a very long time. Like my dad used to talk about years ago, he just died recently, but he used to talk about years ago when they started bringing in licenses here in Saskatchewan. He used to talk about how like licenses weren't a thing, but when they brought them in, they would let you buy whichever license that you wanted, because my grandpa went and bought his first license and there was different options you could buy. Like, it's not like now where you have to take all these ridiculous tests and you have to be granted this and spend time doing that and blah, blah, blah. Back then, they like brought it in and they let you buy whichever license you wanted. And then, because they were like, oh, it's just optional, blah, blah, blah. And then it started to become mandatory that you had to buy one. And then they started bringing in these ridiculous rules that you had to start taking courses and all this other stuff. And it just kind of devolved into absolute nonsense since then. But, yeah, like, technically you can travel on the King's Highways for free and stuff. But they have, like, inflation where if you have a personal automobile that's registered, and this is where they get you here, is in order to be able to get insurance, to be able to have insurance for your automobile, you have to register your automobile as a vehicle. And to be able to register it as a vehicle, it is then subject to the legislation of the roadways or whatever the legislations they have. I can't remember at the minute. I'm not Googling.
Right.
But once you get your insurance and then sign your vehicle up, then you're subject to the road rules. So if you don't have insurance, you can just do whatever you want. But, you know, it's best not to have a license as well, because if you have a license, you're also subject to that nonsense. Once you contract, then there's commerce. No contract, no commerce. But, you know, you have meaner head cops once in a while that, you know, take your shit away from you, and then you have to fight them for it, and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, back to you.
Well, it's the same here in Oregon. it's the same throughout all the British countries that ever came to be. And it's illegal as hell. The insurance for automobiles, it's actually for corporate motor. In Oregon, we call them motor vehicles. In the United States code at Title 18, Section 31, Subsection 6, motor vehicle means every contrivance used for commercial purposes, for transporting persons or property, or both, for compensation or profit. And that's the definition of a motor vehicle. And it's throughout all, you know, the U.S. Constitution is throughout all of the states. It's the major law, the supreme law of the land under Article 6, Section 2, not Section 2, but the second clause. And so if you sign up for insurance, you're becoming a corporate entity, and it is commercial instruments, commercial vehicles that are subject to the law. And that's in our country and your country, all of the regulation, all of the regulation that is commercial.
Mm-hmm.
The people are not supposed to be regulated, right? Is there any law that you're aware of that actually says the people are regulated?
That I'm
say
aware
yes
of?
No.
No. I mean, yes and no. In terms of commercial, no. But in terms of hunting, the hunting legislation that we have here specifically defines people. But that's the only one I've ever been able to find where it's not persons, it's people and individuals. But otherwise, that could be debated. Huh?
That's interesting, and let me compare that with Oregon. In Oregon, we have something called the Administrative Procedures Act, which is bestowed upon us by the U.S. Code. The United States Code was the original place where that was found. And I have called the Fish and Wildlife offices and asked them, I said, do you folks use the same definition of license that is in the Oregon Administrative Procedures Act? And I've been told, yes, of course. Yes, it is. And what is a license in the Administrative Procedures Act in Oregon or across the states, all of the states, and into the United States? It's permission required by law to pursue any commercial activity, trade, occupation, or profession. That's what the definition is. And and do you have a similar chapter, a similar document to our Administrative Procedures Act?
Administrative Procedures Act. I know that we have the Interpretation Act of Canada. I'm sure we have something for administrative procedures. I just can't think of it off the top of my head right now. You're going to have to forgive me. It's like all the things are there, but finding these specific names and things outside of the couple that are right off the tip of my tongue. But we do have the Interpretation Act of Canada, which tells you, how to interpret legislations and things that are brought in here. But there is some administrative processes and stuff in there, and I'm sure we have something that's more specific to actual administration. I could ask Mika, but yeah, we have basically whatever the U.S. has, we have to a degree. You just have to find the name for it.
Yes, and I'm very aware of that, and that's how I started off this evening talking. Under the Administrative Procedures Act in Oregon, there's a rulemaking section, right? And rulemaking is that which guides agencies, state agencies. So that is what the DMV or Oregon Department of Transportation uses in order to create its rules that they use to govern their activities and govern their regulated entities, their commercial entities. So in 1985, our court system sent and contrary to our Constitution, contrary to Article 3 of our Constitution, the separation of powers doctrine, the court said, we're going to have executive branch officers. We're going to have the superintendent of state police, and we're going to have the director of the DMV on our judicial branch agency, an agency of the Supreme Court. So that was unlawful from the beginning. That was, that was 1959 that the legislature put that together. And it was the legislature that did it. I mean, they're the ones that, but it wasn't actually the stupid legislators. It was the attorneys who write the laws who were responsible for the draft that said there's going to be two executive branch members. But anyway, they sent their executive branch officer named David P. Mumau to the legislature and said, ask for this law to be passed so that we won't lose the money that we've been getting used to having come in. We want this law called optional titling. optional means, you know, you have a choice. You can either do it or not do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this rule provided, and it was passed. They the Department of Transportation did not use the word public. They did not use the word people during any of the legislative hearings, the 5 hours of legislative hearings that took place. They did not tell the legislature, the stupid people, who they intended to give this law to. But it says, and this is what it says, the Department of Transportation by rule may provide for the optional titling of vehicles that are not subject to the titling requirement or that are exempt from the titling requirement. Oh my goodness. So who's going to benefit from that? The only possible beneficiary is the agency, right? So then after the rule or after the statute was enacted, they waited. They forgot about it. They never adopted the rule. They never created the rule. Well, they did 20 years later. 20 years later, I called them. I called this guy and I said, hey, this is a really interesting sounding rule. I'd like to get a copy of it. Can you send one to me? And this asshole said, we decided we didn't want to do that, so we don't have one. And I go, really? Well, who's we? I said, your boss, the superintendent or the director of the DMV went to the legislature and bothered them for 5 hours to get them to pass this law authorizing it. And who's we that changed your mind and decided you didn't want to do it? And he dropped the phone. The phone went clank, and that was the end of the conversation. But that same guy was the guy that ended up writing the rule in the next year. That was 2003 when I called them, and the rule was written the statement of, there's several documents, but he started writing it in 2004, and it was enacted or adopted in 2005. And it was the first time that it had ever been authorized on paper in Oregon. And the director of the DMV admitted that. He told the legislative assembly, he said, historically, my agency has been issuing a lot of documents of title and registration without authority in current law. He admitted it. And then in the next paragraph, he wrote, if this authority, which he just said doesn't exist, were not continued, there will be some loss of revenue. Oh, my goodness. And that's how gross this is. It's just, you know, and a state archivist handed me that document. He knew that I was researching this, and he walks up to me one day and he hands it to me and he says, check this out. And I did. And it was just thoroughly, it was amazing to see that written on paper under this guy's name. Actually, his personal assistant produced it, but it's in writing. And that's how crazy, how extremely corrupt this whole thing is. They just admit it. But the legislature, the people that were going to vote for it, they didn't know what to think of it. The first question that was asked after it was read into the record, this one guy says, well, how many vehicles are involved in this illegal titling scheme? And that was his interpretation, that this titling scheme was illegal, and he wanted to know how many vehicles. And this one other, there's the chair of the committee, the legislative administrator of the committee, and the witness, the personal assistant of the DMV director. They were the only three in the room who understood what was going on. And the legislative administrator, she goes, I'll go find out for you. And she never returned with the information that she said she'd bring them back. And they ended up voting to adopt this, or enact this law. And that's, you know, how stupid the legislature is. That we the people, don't know what's going on. We don't know how to listen to attorneys talk. We don't know how to understand the words that are being used as we hear them. Can I say that any differently? Can I say that better? I mean, it's gross to me.
I would interpret it as saying, because when you say understand, that's the one of the word tricks that they use for you, is when you understand, to stand under, to be under their authority. I would rather say that you have standing. You are comprehending their language. It's not your language. You are comprehending their language. When you're talking, you know,
no,
you and I, understanding is just comprehension. To their understanding is to stand under their authority. You are with standing. So that way, so when you present yourself in court, rather than having somebody represent you, your lawyer or attorney or whatever represent you, you present yourself.
Yes, I understand that. And that, have you noticed a change in the amount of representation that is being urged upon us today as compared to maybe 20 years ago? How old, I mean, I don't want you to tell me how old you are, but are you old enough to remember 20 years ago?
I was like 10 years old 20 years ago.
Okay. So historically, what do you know? Is it changing? Are the people becoming more increasingly represented by attorneys?
I wouldn't just say attorneys. I would say absolutely everything. Because growing up being a millennial, like most of my friends personally, just getting a little bit personal here, most of my friends are like Gen Xers and above. Because unfortunately, what the number that they did on millennials is absolutely bloody insane. That these people need to run to the doctor every time they have a sniffle. They need to get an attorney anytime they have a problem. They need to have government involved in every aspect of your life because, you know, with the boomers, you did everything yourself practically outside of the bare minimum government. Then that started to shift with the Gen Xers, so I've heard, that, you know, they started to get government more involved. But by the time they hit millennials, and when I tell you that, like, the socialist brainwashing that we had in university, they almost got me. They almost got me. I was a socialist bootlicking puke to a point where government had to fix all the problems because people were not capable of fixing any problems. Only once I stepped outside of the realm of their indoctrination, it wasn't education, it was indoctrination, to come to realize that it was a big, bloody lie, that the government is not there to help you, and that anything the government can do is being run by human bodies with a consciousness that we can most certainly do ourselves without the stroke of a pen of a bunch of elites and fancy wooden chairs being run by some guy with a crown. It makes no freaking sense. But yes, telling people that they are inadequate and they cannot do absolutely anything themselves, especially in the realm of presenting yourself to these so-called authorities, and authority is entirely an illusion. You have to consent to it. You know, it has definitely been pushed very hard starting my generation and lower, and you notice that, especially like over the last 10 years, I've noticed an increase in that. especially over the last 5, and then most definitely over the last 3. Because before, it was get a second opinion from your doctor. You know, make sure that you question your doctor. Make sure you advocate for yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And then suddenly, we had this global pandemic where it was trust the science, don't question anything, fall in line, or else we're going to take everything you own away. Well, hold on, wait a minute. Now things are starting to go back. However, a lot of people that were outspoken and experts before, they have been silenced, destroyed, and or killed. So everybody, it almost feels like everybody's starting from a fresh slate to a point. The information is there, but it's a matter of getting along and being able to collaborate and, you know, put the ego aside that we're working towards the common good. But it's a matter of, you know, everybody thinks that the common good is coming from their ego, but that's another discussion from another time. So to answer your question, in a relative short answer, yes, I have definitely noticed, especially with attorneys and along everything else where it's the experts know everything, you know nothing, so don't even bother to look because you're dumb.
Yes. Yes, I'm getting that same thing down here in Oregon. It's and I'm suspecting that it's a universal problem. It's something that's going on worldwide. We're all being dumbed down. And this is exactly why the Article 1, Section 1 of the Oregon Constitution is so important to the Oregon Statewide Jural Assembly. That's why it's so important. But I don't know what to do about it. I really don't. Except today. Today I was asked, why don't you write? They're saying we've been programmed. We've been what is that word? We've been the victims of propaganda. So what we need is a little pamphlet that explains the words that are found in the vehicle code. And that we don't understand. Do people in Canada understand the word operate? That it's a
depends
business term.
Depends on who
term?
You talk to. It depends on who you talk to.
In Oregon, on the street, almost everybody considers operate something that they, each individual, does when they get in their car. They all operate their vehicle. But it is a corporate term. It's a business term. Every business operates, right? And this is one of the words. We had an attorney named Jack Solis in Oregon who was in favor of the people. He was one of the last people-oriented attorneys. And he told the Legislative Assembly in 1984, he said, you need 21 definitions in your new revised code. And three of them, the three most common words in the vehicle code today, were not included. They were driver. There's no definition of driver. There's no definition of operate. And there's no definition of traffic. And so this guy was telling me, you need to write a pamphlet that explains the craziness of these words and the real meaning. And I've been thinking about that for months, actually. But today was the first time somebody actually told me you need to write it. So that's what I was going to do tonight until I got your call. But so congratulations to you for distracting me.
Yay! I accomplished something tonight. Winning.
So when we get done with this second hour, what are you going to do next?
What am I going to do next?
Yeah.
Well, if you're done talking, I'm going to go find some other current news event to talk about.
Well, I can talk about Oregon law, but it is pretty specific to Oregon law. But It is very specific to all the British countries in the world, former
mm-hmm.
British colonies. Except that I just think that you are so much more aware of your local situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know that I'm really competent to help you in your show. Do you think I'm helping you?
I think you're helping. I have listeners from the UK to Canada to United States. I've got quite a few friends in Oregon. My best friend is in Oregon, my best friend Sherry. I've had her on the show a couple times talking about birth. She's a elder midwife. I can also take and snip out this part of the show if you're wanting, and I can upload it to my talk show, which I can upload on the Freedomizer website, and you can take that particular clip and download it and go upload it wherever you'd like. I can most certainly, there will be people who will be listening to this show who are either from Oregon or who know people in Oregon who can forward this information to others. Or at the very least, just listen to it and have a discussion. Have a discussion about what's going on in their own area of the United States or Canada or the UK or Australia. Being able to be privy to this kind of information, like, you know, we had already touched on, you know, like you had brought up, that, you know, when we have things going on, you know, outside of the UCC in the United States for legislation, quite often you'll have mirroring legislation in Canada, or you could have mirroring legislation in Australia, or mirroring legislation in the UK or things like that. At the very least, I think this is a very good means of having discussion, opening the floor to be able to engage in debate, to be able to brainstorm, to be able to have iron sharpening iron, to be able to find solutions. You know, like you said, like you don't really have any solutions, but, you know, maybe somebody's going to listen to this podcast that maybe they do have some solutions, or they have something that they're working on that is working, or maybe be able to bring more people to your table that will have those kinds of solutions that you can talk with absolutely personally. I did get your website up, orsja.org. So people, if they're listening to this podcast, they can head over to that website, get in touch with you guys, and have more of a discussion. I think this is good. I'm not going to say that, you know, oh, well, you know, like my show is meant to be, it's open world, it's an open door, it's an open mat. If sometimes we're talking about things happening here, that's great. I often talk about, you know, world events and things happening in Japan or China or South America or the UK or, you know, like Russia or things like that. You know, we're not restricting what we can talk about, where we can talk about things, you know, so long as we're not sharing like copyrighted information or, you know, threatening or harassing people or things like that. Let's not break the rules and get kicked off the platform. But, you know, just basic things. It's like, let's have a discussion. You know, let's go in and out, and then maybe this will further into a further discussion or, again, like maybe a solution. Or, you know, I'm definitely not opposed to discussing. And if you want to share specific legislation in your area, I'm not opposed. I might be asking more questions than having answers. But you know what? Again, questions further more discussion. And, you know, if you don't know an answer, it will, you know, bring forward that ability to go find an answer, you know, as long as you're open and accepting of.
Yeah, we
can talk about it. I like that. It's good.
Okay. So one of the things that's going on in Oregon is that it is long been, for the last 100 years, it's been a leader in the vehicle code. It's been one of the first states to adopt and to contribute to the Uniform Vehicle Code of 1926. It was one of the first entities that did that. It was the first state to have motor vehicle fuel tax in 1921. This This means that Oregon is a leader, and if I can bring Oregon to a halt, then all the other states will begin to shut down, at least their Department of Transportation will. So that's why I'm stuck here in Oregon. I mean, I've long thought about leaving. I'm not from Oregon. I was born in Missouri in the Midwest of the United States. But so I have a lot of options of places I could go, but I am stuck here because it is such a prominent Department of Transportation is such a prominent U.S. feature. So I'm stuck here working on it. And one of the things that I'm working on is we have something called the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, OSSA, right? And the sheriffs, we the Oregon Statewide Jural Assembly, are trying to talk to them and trying to get them to take an oath of office, which is legitimate. They have been subject to an oath of office, which is not legitimate, since 1910. In 1910, our Constitution in Oregon changed. We added something called Article 7 amended, which is the judicial branch, the section on the judicial branch. And the amended section provides for a corporate judicial system, a system of handling businesses. And it's not legitimate because one of our associates went around the state to every county, to every elections office in Oregon and asked, can I see the election results for 1910 in regard to the Article 7 amended? Not one county ever counted one vote on that so-called referendum. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that gross? That guy... He wrote a book about it, The Vultures. That's another book that everybody should try to get and read, The Vultures. He did this in, I think it was
Who's
about
it by?
2000.
The Vultures? Who's it by?
The author is Milt, M-I-L-T, Mitchek, M-I-T-C-H-E-K, Milt Mitchek. And he wrote The Vultures, yes. And it's about the fact that this particular law was never even voted on. It was stuck on the books under fraudulent circumstances. And it did provide for something we call the Oregon Court of Appeals. And the Oregon Court of Appeals is the agency or the court, the so-called court, that handles agency contested cases. And agency contested cases are not cases comprised of due process. You were talking about how there's no due process in Canada. Well, with the Oregon Court of Appeals, there is no due process in Oregon either. So that is one of the Oregon Statewide Jural Assembly's primary undertakings is to get rid of that. I'm not sure how it's going to end, but we've been working on it for several years now. But so I'm working on a statewide level. I'm working on that with the Statewide Jural Assembly. I'm working on the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. I'm trying to get them to acknowledge what the word traffic is about, what the word traffic even means. And I think we talked about that a little bit, right? We talked about traffic. Traffic is, mm-hmm. means the movement of merchandise, right? It doesn't mean a bunch of cars on the street. Not cars. It's trucks,
yep.
generally. It's yep. the trucks that go down to the railhead and load up their, you know, unload the train and onto their trucks and then haul it to the store shelves. And they're trafficking in doing so. And that's where that word came. Well, no, it was, it's been part of our vocabulary for hundreds of years. And it's always meant the same thing. But today, people believe generally that it means we're stuck in traffic. There's too many cars on the street at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, that isn't traffic. And that's why we have, that's why it's regulated, because it's commercial, it's business. And our Constitution provides for the regulation of commerce. It provides, and that's how our government was to be funded, was through excise and imposts, excise taxes and imposts, right? Which is all commercial. But we didn't make it. Now we're in the hole. Now we're bankrupt. We're so far in the hole. We're trillions of dollars in the hole. But and we keep on voting to what? Increase our debt level, the level of debt that we can function under. It's just anyway. So all of this is screwing with my mind, and I am worried about it every day, all day. I spent the day in the library today reading a case from 1932, which was about the case was about a group of truckers who hauled for personal or private parties. They hauled, they were called storage, moving and storage vans, right? And
okay.
I've got the Portland Van and Storage Company versus our Secretary of State. And they said, we're not transporting persons or property for compensation. We're hauling somebody's personal stuff to another location, to either storage or to another office or to another home. And
mm-hmm.
and we are therefore not subject to the motor vehicle laws as they're written, as they are written. And it was such a beautiful case. The beauty of it is actually that the difference between licensed drivers and these folks is that one of them is working for the public, hauling merchandise that is for sale, for resale to the public. And the other is hauling for a personal, a private owner of something that he wants to move it. But that's such a small detail nowadays. It's such, and but for me, or me, it means, look, I can show this to any stupid human being and say, okay, this defines what a driver is. It defines what
mm-hmm.
who an operator is. And the Secretary of State won this. He got to license those trucks that hauled private stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is so explicit. The length, it's 13 pages. It's a 13-page document, and it's so explicit about what operating means and who is operating. And no one can argue with it. It's just that's how explicit it is. And I want to read that again. I want to read the name of this. It's Portland Van and Storage Company versus HOSS, who was the Secretary of State in Oregon at that time, and doing the titling and registering of trucks and licensing of drivers. It's just an amazing document. Yeah, have you ever heard of anything like that?
Haven't heard of that one. Haven't heard of that one yet, so I'm going to have to definitely check that out. Where can people find that document? Also, like you mentioned, you had gone to the library. Is there anywhere like online because somebody can find it? Because like Canada, we have like the Supreme Court Lexium. We have like canlii.org, canlii.org. Like where can we find that specific?
Well, it was online, you know, and the thing about the library is that I don't have to use my name. I don't use my name, my location, and that's what I do at the library. I'm hiding out. I'm avoiding arrest. I'm laying low.
Yeah.
I am a fugitive. The people in the statewide general assembly have a joke. You know, they call me the fugitive. So that's just the way it is. But this is online. It's online. Portland search. If you search Portland Van and Storage Company versus Haas, 139 OR 434, you'll get it. You'll get it. But it has to do with the law of 1929, Chapter 394, the Oregon, the Federal Laws of Oregon, 1929, Chapter 394, was the basis for the people that hauled private stuff, not for sale, not for retail, and they were saying we're not drivers. We don't have to have a driver license. But they ended up making them do that anyway. They made them get licenses. So, but it's very explicit detail that most people today are not aware of. We can't remember this. It's not given to us in school. And that's another thing. School. How do people get so stupid? In Oregon, we have a law that requires schools to provide 5 years of constitutional, U.S. Constitution, prior to graduation, commencing no later than the beginning of the eighth grade and continuing through 12th, and then into universities that are listed. It used to be all institutions of higher education, right? But they amended that about 11 years ago. And now it's... And then in the next paragraph, it says, special emphasis shall be placed on the U.S. Constitution and the Oregon Constitution. So if the U.S. Constitution gets 5 years, how much time, how many years of education should you get on the Oregon Constitution? In my humble estimation, it's 5 years, right? If it's special emphasis and there's no difference, you know, it doesn't say there's any other difference, it's got to be the same. It's got to be 5 years for both the U.S. and the Oregon Constitution. And it doesn't happen. I've been in the state program called the Ombudsman's Program, where you go around and visit people that are in elder care facilities, right? I used to do that. And I asked all these older folks, did you ever get 5 years of constitutional studies when you were in school? No one ever did. No one that I have ever talked to ever did. And they were, you know, in that era when it should have been, it was enacted. That law was enacted in 1923. That was that was when it happened. Nobody's ever done it. So that's why we're so stupid. I hate to say that, but that's, we are. And
it's fact.
And we have to undo it. I don't know how to undo it, except I should be writing. I should be writing this pamphlet now about all these words that are, we lost their meaning through propaganda. Okay?
Nope.
Got a question for me?
Oh, man, not at the moment. What I'm going to do, though, is we're going to take another quickie break, and we're going to come back, and then I'm going to pound you with questions. Alrighty, guys.
Okay.
We'll be back here in about 5 minutes.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like,
but what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
The following message is sponsored by Truth. Are you or someone you know suffering from sheepalism? Sheepalism is a debilitating disorder which affects a person's entire worldview and is characterized by ignorance, denial, abandonment of basic morals and values. An unwillingness to think critically about things read or heard by mainstream media is a strong sign that you have been affected. Fortunately, sheepalism is treatable in many cases. Treatment may include, but is not limited to, training to help the patient understand that truth is being intentionally withheld. Help in understanding that assumptions and speculations do not qualify as evidence for truth. Living with sheepalism is frustrating. Thankfully, there's hope for those suffering this debilitating condition. If you or someone you know is dealing with sheepalism, please contact your local Truth Movement for treatment. They're standing by to help you now, and remember, you're not alone. Side effects of treatment may or may not include shortness of breath, migraines, anaphylactic shock, and a worst scenario heart attack. See your support specialist for details.
Have you looked at the price of Bitcoin lately? Cryptocurrencies are the hottest financial investment right now. Well, what if you can get free Bitcoin fractions by having an app on your phone or PC? Introducing Lolli, a website that rewards you with free Bitcoin pieces with your online purchases. You purchase from one of thousands of companies like Chewy, Old Navy, Groupon, and others. You get a percent of your purchase back in Bitcoin. Use my link on freedomizerradio.live or find me on Facebook for your special link to get started. Lolly, earn free Bitcoin while you shop.
Freaks, outsiders, weirdos, the wallflowers, oddball loser, fish out of water, speak up, talk quieter. We are different. There's no arguing. It's a fact. A patchwork of flaws, we grow and adapt. We're funky, unconventional, see life through kaleidoscope eyes. In a field full of clovers, with our four leaves, we bask in blue skies. Flaws are natural. Our imperfections, our weaknesses, our scars. There is a misfit in all of us. We just have to be brave enough to embrace who we are.
Hello, everybody. We are back for our third segment, and we are here with Richard. He is part of the ORSJA. I'm going to remember that. I have it on the website.
Oregon Statewide Drill Assembly. Okay.
There we go. Oregon Statewide Drill Assembly. Look there. Here I am pretending to be smart, and I can't even pronounce. But yeah, anyway, we had a good conversation over the last couple hours. We have been talking about the DMV, traveling without a license, starting to learn the language of the attorneys and the secrets that the bar likes to hold from you, trying to live within your human capacity, your people capacity, your individual soul-given right capacity. We left off talking about education and how they're not teaching things like the Constitution in schools. They're not teaching the basics of what makes the country run. What they're holding you to if you mess up, but they're not teaching you the rules on how to actually get the job done. It's actually really interesting that you brought that up. I remember watching, it was a couple years ago, I think it might have been a TikTok or an Instagram video or a Facebook video, I can't remember, but I remember specifically this teacher was talking about how in the United States he was, I don't remember where he was, but I remember he was talking about how he was actually trying to teach the kids about the Constitution, and he actually got fired over it, like grade A fired over teaching the kids the Constitution. It was absolutely wild. I remember that was a big jaw dropper. That is just like, and this is why they want to indoctrinate your kids into state propaganda. And propaganda was actually a term that was really brought into popularity by Eddie Bernays. Have you ever heard of Eddie Bernays?
No.
You need to check out Eddie Bernays. In fact, if you pop over to libgen.is, libgen.is, download his book, Propaganda, because he is the guy that every marketing genius knows about. He was the guy, when you hear about him, you hear about his Torches of Freedom, and that's where he really kind of took off. Sigmund Freud was his uncle. Okay, so he was quite privy to, oh yes, when you start looking, we're talking about like how the system is all intertwined. When you start looking into people like Eddie Bernays, I'm pretty sure that the guy who owns Netflix, he's also tied in with the Freud family, either Eddie Bernays was his uncle or something. So the guy who owns Netflix, the guy who created Netflix, he's in with this family. Kind of makes you think, hey? But anyway, Eddie Bernays, his infamous public stunt. So back in the day in like 40s or 50s or whenever this was, I don't remember specifically. You can Google it specifically. Women had the freedom to smoke. However, it was socially frowned upon in society for women to smoke. So he came up with this marketing gig because, the tobacco companies wanted to make more money. So he came up with this marketing gig of having basically these suffragettes go down during a parade, so to speak, smoking cigarettes, calling them the Torches of Freedom. What he was able to do was to manipulate women into thinking that being able to smoke was equated to freedom, even though they had the freedom to smoke the whole time. Nobody was even convincing them, or nobody was saying that they couldn't. Nobody was saying they couldn't buy cigarettes. Nobody was saying they couldn't smoke. It was simply socially frowned upon. And he was able to manipulate people into allowing women to smoke as socially acceptable as a means of making more money for the tobacco companies. And he was able to do this for soap companies. He was able to do, Eddie Bernays was the guy that you called. He was affiliated with, what the hell was that president's name? I don't know if it was Reagan or whatever, but he was the guy that the president called for their campaigns. He was the guy that the big corporations called. When you start looking into this guy and was able to see, you know, he actually wrote a book called Propaganda, in which he tells you, teaches you how to manipulate people for marketing purposes. And one of the fundamental core beliefs that Eddie Bernays, truly to his core belief, and you can lead, there was actually a documentary, and I think it was his own daughter or his niece or somebody, that he believed that people, like you said, are too stupid to make decisions on their own. Therefore, people who are smarter than you, the people, you know, like Eddie Bernays and all these bankers and politicians, the people that you look up to that, you know, have this authority over you, this fake authority, this perceived authority, they need to lay out your options in nice little boxes. And if you try to go outside of that, good luck. They need to place your decisions in front of you. You need to get to pick A, B, or C. And you get to see this in schools quite a lot. When you see a lot of students, when they have to pick a topic for their essay, they're given a piece of paper that says you need to write an essay, it needs to have this much, blah, blah, blah. You need to choose one of these topics. This is essentially what the government, the bankers, the big marketing companies and everything, this is what they're doing to you. They're providing you with your choices, and you can't go outside of those choices. So you think you have a choice. You think you're making a decision on your based on your own free will, when in reality you actually aren't. You're being treated like a child in a school. It's a prison of the mind. And he wrote books and stuff about this. And actually, fun fact, Joseph Goebbels, Eddie Bernays and Joseph Goebbels were actually giving credit to each other's work. Joseph Goebbels was, I don't know if you know who Joseph Goebbels is at all, but if you don't know who, I'm not saying you specifically, but for listeners who don't know, Joseph Goebbels was the propagandist, Hitler's propagandist back in, you know, World War II. So Eddie Bernays was alive during World War II, and he was actually doing a lot of his work, and he came up with the term. The term propaganda was not publicized and given the stigma until World War II. So it's actually really interesting, because prior to that, propaganda was simply a word on what was essentially like the proper education. It was a word used in what was that guy's name? I can never remember names. You'll hear about it if you read Eddie Bernays' book, Propaganda. And if you don't want to sit down and actually read the book, you don't want to download and read it, you can find it free on YouTube. There are a couple of audiobooks. Plug yourself in a headphone. It's about three or four hours long, but it is going to blow your freaking mind on where we came from with the terms propaganda, which was essentially like almost like state-based proper education, but it wasn't seeing that stigma, that negative light until World War II, when, you know, the propaganda from the other side. We don't want them propagandizing people. So we're going to do it in a light that we see it, that it's best for our people. We're going to enlighten our people. Meanwhile, they're mind-controlling absolutely everybody and their dog into this little mind state box. Can't go outside of that, because otherwise you get into trouble. The state will inflict coercion and violence on you if you step outside of the box. So be a good little slave, or else they're going to tell you how to get it done, up to and including possibly taking your own life from you. Because they don't want other people believing and being able to exercise free will and all those other kinds of things on top of that. So I just wanted to bring those couple of things up, because when you're talking about that they don't teach this in school, yeah, they don't teach this in school. Because if people were actually taught these things in school, their minds would be unwarped. they wouldn't be, you know, freaking out over whether they identify as a turtle or NB or whatever. They would be, you know, fighting for their freaking rights and realizing who they are as a being outside of the labels and things that they're pushing in school now. Actually, I'm going to go Google this. Anyway, your turn.
Okay. And I do know the guy named Goebbels, and he was a very famous guy in as far as propaganda goes. He was also he helped corporate executives in this country make a lot of money by brainwashing customers. But one of the things that I heard you say before the 5-minute break was that you were going to ask me, you're going to unload a lot of questions on me. Are you up for that?
I am up for that. So in terms, like, obviously teaching the Constitution as a whole would be the most ideal thing. And you said you came up with the idea of, like, 5 years, so to speak. Where would you want to start in terms of, number one, teaching adults about the Constitution? We're just kind of like going over like the stuff we talked about right before the break, and then we'll expand on other things. But where would you specifically, if you could sit down and start teaching not only adults, but children? And I don't really know if, like, I'm not really talking so much about, like, you know, 5, 6, 7-year-olds, but I'm talking about, like 13, 14, 15-year-olds. Like, they're not young adults, but, you know, children that are able to understand. Where would you specifically, what would your ideal start teaching adults, and where would you start with, like, children with things like the Constitution?
I would start with Article 1, Section 1. The first thing that anybody has to understand is that there is no one between yourself and the greater power, the power that created you, and no one in between that greater power and yourself can tell you what to do. We are all free. Human beings are essentially required. We're created with the intent of the Creator to be free, to do what we are capable of doing. That's where we need to start. We need to understand that we are free, that we are, there's no one else telling us what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Live human beings are created free. Is there another place where we should be? I mean, that's where I'm coming from. And everything in the Constitution, the Oregon Constitution is a huge volume compared to the U.S. Constitution. But both of those constitutions, in the U.S. Constitution, in Article 1, Section 8, it describes what the government does. And the government regulates commerce. It regulates interstate commerce. It is an institution that taxes imposts and exports. And it created the highway system. It created post offices. It created money. All of these things are commercial. But the people, we get to do whatever we're inclined to do. And the government regulates those. And the taxes, the whole thing about taxes, if we were living out in the woods on a farm and hunting for our, you know, hunting the squirrels that we needed to eat, and we didn't go to the store, we wouldn't be paying taxes. We wouldn't be paying. And so to the extent that we do that, well, that's when we start paying taxes. We don't pay direct taxes. We pay indirect taxes. We reimburse the companies that sell things to us. But if we are totally independent, if we're out there just doing it ourselves, we don't pay taxes, and the government can't regulate us. So that's the difference between regulated entities and the people. And we need to know that.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand that. That's pretty foundational.
So playing devil's advocate here for a quick second, just because that is a common question that I personally get, but I want to hear your perspective on this. What do you say to people where they come at you and they say, but taxes are necessary for a functioning society? What, in your opinion, what do you say to these people that, you know, like, oh, well, you know, our roads and this and that, you know, specifically?
Well, in Oregon, way back before we even had a constitution, when we were a territory, we had a law that said taxes will be paid on, but we agreed, and this is something that we can say we need to spend money for roads, but it's not necessarily money. Actually, the law said taxes on the roads shall be $2 per year, or a day's labor on the highway near where you live. And so people that were living independently, farmers, hunters, people living out there on the land, they didn't have to make money. They could contribute their labor, their energy, to the highways that connected us all, that connected us to towns, that connected us to commerce. So, and that was way back in the 1940s. And that law continued through the Constitution. Our Constitution was adopted, enacted in 1857 and accepted by the U.S. The U.S. Congress in 1859. And it's never changed. I mean, it's been added to. Yeah, it's been added to over the years. And some of the things I'm not exactly excited about change, but... what was your question again? Why do we need to pay taxes? Because we decide to pay taxes. We decide as a community, well, we need to develop a water system. We need to build a dam. And it's not money. It's our energy. So we get to decide that. And in a representative government, we get to elect the prominent members, those members of our community that we think are fit to lead. And we ask them to delegate jobs to those who are less, you know, less likely to lead. But it's not necessarily money. Or taxes, it's what we need to have done. It's what we need to survive. It's what we need to create hospitals and libraries and anything else. It's not that government should tell us what to do. We get to tell government. We are the government. We have all the power. Is that making any sense?
I like it. I don't entirely agree with it, but I like it.
Do we have all the power?
We definitely have all the power.
Okay.
We definitely have all the power. See, my ideals are quite, how do I say, extreme. They're quite extreme. Personally, I'm an anarchist, and I know that it's, you know, nobody is above one another, and personally, I don't care to consent to authority, specifically leaders, because if people are going to be doing these kinds of things, I also personally know that people should be able to opt out of. Now, you know, when you're talking
about,
like, consenting, not be forced to engage.
Okay, right. We shouldn't be forced.
Volunteerism.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So, personally, like, I remember seeing an article quite some time ago that, like, GoFundMe pays for, like, what, like, a third of the medical bills or something, like, or a third of, like, medical bills on, how did they say that? A third of the fundraisers on GoFundMe are for things like medical bills. And I know we could get in discussions about, like, you can actually, Adam Ruins Everything, way back in the day, College Humor, had this episode of, there was this guy, his name is Adam Ruins Everything, and you can Google medical insurance, Adam Ruins Everything, and he actually went fairly in-depth with a bit of humor, talking about prior to the insurance companies kind of coming out and ruining with, you know, what is usury, making these ridiculous bills that they were, because the insurance companies basically went in a cahoots with the hospitals. And they decided to start making these outrageous hospital bills that, you know, the hospital would pay. And you would have to get insurance for. However, if you don't have insurance, that you have to pay these ridiculous bills. This is why in America, you know, one stub toe could ruin you financially. Like, don't even think about getting in an accident, because if you get in an accident, like, you're looking at $1 million, and good luck trying to pay that. It's straight up usury, and you can fight them to the death about that, and you will probably win about that. But I find it really interesting about the whole taxes and thing, because here in Canada, being sovereign myself, not being part of the system myself, I discovered a couple of things that, you know, just like the American system where, like, you know, you have to have, like, insurance for them to cover your bills, that, like, everybody thinks that, like, Canada's in health insurance is free. No, it is not free, and it is only, quote-unquote, free to a point if you are issued a health card in certain provinces. In British Columbia, you still need insurance. In Saskatchewan, you can get, like, a health card. In Alberta, you can get a health card. But, like, you know, certain things are covered in certain provinces. It just depends on where you are. I was actually kind of messed up to find out a couple years ago that in BC, even though it's covered in certain things to a certain point, you still need health insurance. You still need private insurance. The hospitals here, just like they are in the States, are private. They're all privately run. However,
yes.
However, they're paid for by government tax dollars. So if you don't have a health card, you're paying that out of pocket. So if you are here with, like, a visa and you need to go to the hospital and you don't have proper coverage, you need to pay for that out of pocket. For myself, if I want to go to the hospital because I broke my freaking leg, I have to pay like a $300 or $400 flat fee just to walk through the hospital doors. Then on top of that, I have to pay the doctor like minimum of a couple hundred dollars. Like for stitches, it's like $300 or $400 for stitches. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
for like 20 yeah. minutes of the doctor's time, a string and a needle, it's $400 freaking. $400. So okay. it just kind of like irks me just a wee bit when people say like we need to have taxes to pay for these things when we're paying for these things essentially out of pocket anyway. And like I know like, you know, people say like you're saying yourself that it's like, well, you know, we need to be able to dictate where our money goes. Here's my question to you. Why do you need a central governing body to dictate where your money goes? Why can't you do that yourself? Why can't you and a bunch of people get together yourselves and pay for the things that you see from your pocket into somebody else's business? Why do you need a middleman that knows better than you to tell you where things go? That's my question.
I don't think you do. I don't think we do. I think that we all have the capacity to form communities and educate members of our community to be doctors, to be auto mechanics, to be food producers, whatever. We don't need to do any of, you know, we don't need to pay taxes. We can generate whatever we need as a community, and people are doing that. There's a let's see, I have right here, I have a document called Humble Roots Ministry, a membership application. Have you ever, and this is for a group of people that just share, they just share intimately with each other, right? And they claim all their authority is under the Constitution, but it's a very small, it's probably about 7 font page, so there's a lot of type on it, but these people are so, and I lectured with them 2 weeks ago, 2 Saturdays ago. Mm-hmm. So that
is this found on YouTube anywhere? Like this lecture that you attended with them, is there anywhere we could find that? Or is it just kind of a private thing?
It was a private thing. I stuck a recorder next to my head on the mantle, but I did not turn it on. I mm-hmm. intended to, but I didn't. So that it doesn't work. Let's see. I'll read a sentence out of here. It says, "We hereby declare that we are exercising our right of freedom of association of as guaranteed by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. For the U.S. Constitution and the equivalent provisions of the various state constitutions, as well as the Charter of Rights of Canada. This means that our association activities are restricted in the private domain only and outside of the jurisdiction of the governmental entities, agencies, officers, agents, contractors and other representatives as provided by law." Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, you don't, our Constitution provides us the right to associate in any size group or for any reason that we want to. And these mm-hmm. people they meet a couple times a month. They have potluck lunches. And then a lecture. And we can all do that. There's
Man, that sounds like a lot of fun.
they government cannot stop us from associating. They cannot and in the first Supreme Court in the first term of the US Supreme Court, there was a case where where the court said the people of the United States have all the power and the rights of the king, all the rights of the king of England, except that they have no subjects, but themselves. They are their own subjects. And what right does a king, or what, who gets to tax a king? No one, right? So we have that. That is part of our U.S. Supreme Court history. Don't you have something similar to that in Canada?
Nope. Unfortunately, we do not, because unlike the United States, where they were bringing people over and the United States were kind of busy conquering the indigenous people and then got fed up with the crown and their nonsense and then went to war and kicked crown out, Canada never really had that. They brought over their colonies, they made treaties with the indigenous people, and then kind of committed genocide against the indigenous people, didn't uphold the treaties. Meanwhile, everybody here is a bunch of feudal peasants. You can't, as a citizen, get land here outside of the highest title of land you can get here is fee simple. Fee simple, in all intents and purposes, is as close to a lodial title as you can get. Down in the United States, you can get a lodial title. Now, I'm sure there are ways that you can get a lodial title in Canada. However, being a citizen, acting in the public capacity, whereas if you either get rid of your birth certificate and stuff altogether, or secondarily, you work at privatizing your status, and if you go to Brian's group, Technical Sovereignty, Administering the Estate. All these people have privatized their status. So you can own land there in allodial title. So the government can't touch it. The banks can't touch it. Big corporations can't touch it. It's yours. Period, point blank, until you either decide to sell it or gift it or do whatever you want to it. It is yours. End of story. Here, though, it's a little harder to get because they want you to have fee simple. Fee simple, in etymological terms, the same as fief, feudal. We literally live in a feudal system here in Canada, so it is a lot harder to try and get those things. And on top of that, the indigenous people still have title to the land here. They've actually taken the crown to court 3 times and told the crown to provide, because the crown says that they own, essentially, in right of Canada. I mean, I know they have the doctrine of discovery, which is, you know, whatever, but essentially Canada likes to pretend they own the land here, and they've been taken to court 3 times and told to produce the documents that they have in right of Canada, the title to the land, and they still can't produce it. That's one thing that's really frustrating, is even though the quote-unquote laws of the land, even they're not really the laws of the land, they're the laws of the sea that have been pushed onto the land, just because it's de facto doesn't mean it isn't a system that holds power. So,
Just because it's de facto doesn't mean that it has power. De facto is they're in fact in possession, but they are not legitimate. The meaning of de facto is less than legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay. Less than legitimate. In fact, I think they actually used to have it up until the last, like, 5 years or so. The Queen's Privy, or the Queen's Privy Council, like the Governor General of Canada, actually had it on their website that they were the de facto head of Canada. It was actually on there for a really long time until they recently switched it, because they like to, all this information used to be up and in your face. And now, because more people are catching on, they're trying to hide more and more of it. Even like the whole 96 is your fix. The remittance slip and things like that, accepted for value. Used to be a lot easier to accept things for value until too many people started catching on. Now a lot of the banks and stuff don't really do that, or they, if they do, they make it very difficult for you now to try and do that because, you know, they don't want you catching on to these things. They don't mind a few people slipping through the cracks, but they don't want the majority of people to wake up. The majority of people wake up, you're in trouble.
The government.
Back to you.
The government.
Okay. Well, I am so separate from what's going on in Canada. You know, I am so involved in Oregon. I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm an American, and an American who lives in Oregon. So I'm not really competent for this conversation about what's going on in Canada. I don't know what to say about it, actually. But if I can say anything about Oregon's motor vehicle laws that might be of some value to somebody in Canada or Saskatchewan, what would it be? What would I have to say?
What would you have to say for people that are here?
Yeah, about the common elements of the motor vehicle laws.
Everything
in all,
outside of like the DMV, the specific organizations in Canada and the United States, they are entirely the same. The only thing you have to do is find your specific legislation, learn how your specific courts work, blah, blah, blah. But the stuff in the States and the stuff in Canada is inherently entirely the same. And you don't need to have, if you were to tell people here specifically that you don't need to have these licenses. I mean, what is a license? Like a, you know, I mean, Black's Law Dictionary, the permission to do something otherwise illegal. Well, wait a minute. What makes something illegal? Well, everything legal is unlawful. What they do is you take your rights away under, you know, coercion, violence, duress, mind control. They convince you to give your fundamental freedoms, your inherited rights up. Then they tell you that they're smarter than you, that they're better than you, and that they get to determine whether or not you get to do something that just yesterday was perfectly fine for you to do. Then they sell you back your fundamental freedoms, and if you don't comply, all the rules that they just created, whether they make sense or not, if you don't comply with their rules that they created because you're too stupid. Like I said yesterday, you are perfectly fine to keep doing what you are doing, but today you're too stupid. And if you break the rules, they're going to take all your money and your car away, because when you register something, you give it back to the king.
Okay, you're talking about corporate entities, businesses that are called commercial, right? Mm-hmm. They're engaged in activities that are profit making, right?
You betcha.
And the people are not involved in commercial automobile use. The people, in Canada, well, where you live, where you can see, is there a noticeable number of people that are running around without license plates on their car?
Oh, no. Unless you go to the reserve or out in the country. If you go way out in the boonies on the country, or if you're driving around or traveling around, I guess you could say, if you're bebopping around on the reserve, you'll see that all over on the reserve. You'll see that on the back roads in the country, especially in, like, you know, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba. But anywhere else, you don't see that.
Okay. Yeah. So it's those kind of people, the ones that are not aware that they have discretion. They have discretion to do without plates.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the, and how will I
encourage them to give up the plate idea? What do they need to know? What do we all need to know? How did it happen? How did it happen that they have been convinced? I mean, you've said they're convinced,
and
it's been increasingly so over the last several years. But how did they get that way, and what can we do, and what do I need to do in my little pamphlet that I'm supposed to be writing, but I'm not? What do I do in that? What do I say to help these people comprehend that there's a difference between autonomous people and corporate entities that are subject to the state's licensing routine, the program? What do I say to them? I mean, that's the fundamental question. How do we undo the propaganda? I don't know. I've been struggling with this for, well, at least 28 years. But in addition to that, the years that I spent with legislative counsel, Tom Clifford, I spent another 7 or 8 years with him. So it's been a long time. And I don't know. I don't know what to say except highway means. Every public way open to the general public for vehicles and in Oregon, or vehicular traffic as a matter of right. We get to engage in traffic. How many times do we have to say it? What is it that is going to convince people? Tell me what happens when somebody takes their plates off and they go down the street in their car without plates. What happens in Saskatchewan? Are they pulled over by multiple police officers?
I've been pulled over twice. I've been pulled over twice. And
you don't have plates on your car?
I had unregistered plates on my car. I keep them on just so that either I use out-of-province plates or I just keep something on the car, because the cops here are more likely to pull you over if you've got no plates, because they're thinking that you've got a stolen vehicle. So it's safer to have plates than it is to not.
And they should look like government plates, right?
Well,
that's what you're saying.
See, yeah, it depends on what you want to do, because I have friends around Canada that have their own plates, and they do their thing that way, and some of them get left alone, some of them don't get left alone. If you have out-of-province plates, they technically can't write you a ticket because it's out-of-province, so that's just a neat trick, which, you know, when they're going to start amalgamating everything, that's something that people really need to watch for, because, you know, those little tips and tricks are not going to be available. But let me tell you my first experience when I got pulled over by a cop. The very first time. It was just a week before that I had actually gone into the SDI, and I got rid of my driver's license. So I had one up until this point. I wasn't using it. I was trying to live as free and as sovereign as possible after I had my second kid. As soon as my midwifery appointments are done, I went in and I got rid of that's when I got rid of everything. This was beforehand, actually. This was beforehand, where I went in and I got rid of my driver's license.
You turned it in.
After? Anyway, yeah, I went in and I turned it in. I got a notarized affidavit, and it was actually kind of funny because I was talking to the guy, great guy, and he's just like, are you sure you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. And he's just like, okay, because like you have like a class 1 license or whatever. He's like, you know this is going to be really hard to get back if you ever like want to redo this. And I'm like, no, it's okay, it's cool. And he's like, you know you can't drive anymore, right? I'm like, yeah, I know. I was like, this is something I've wanted to do for a very long time. It's like, today I have the balls to do it though. And he's just like, you know what? He told me. And he's just like, I'm going to keep your license for you for 1 week. Because we had a lady come in here last year or a couple years ago, and she tried to do the same thing. And we had gotten rid of it, or she came back like a week later or something because she was having, or was a month later. Anyway, she came back in a certain period of time, and she came and begged for her license back because she realized she couldn't do this, she couldn't do that, she couldn't do this. She wasn't ready. She wasn't educated. She wasn't spiritually ready. She wasn't emotionally ready. She wasn't mentally ready. She was not ready. So she went and begged for her license back. And I told him, you know what? You can just throw it away right now. I'm not going to need it. And they're like, okay. So I left. 6 days later, I got pulled over by a cop. I was going to a friend's house in another town, and I was taking the highway. Got pulled over by a cop. I had just managed to get into town. I saw he was coming up on my plate or on my car. I whipped the hell into town because I knew that they were going to get me. Because this is rule number one. If you don't have plates and you don't, you know, travel with that and that kind of stuff, you don't have, like, registered plates, never, ever, ever let a cop get behind you, guys. Never. Because if they read your plates, because they got plate readers and stuff now, you're done. You're done. Never let a cop get behind you. Anyway, he got behind me because there was nowhere I could turn off on the highway. I managed to get into town. I saw him, like, fly across the ditch. He just went zipping, and he was going to come get me. He, like, you know, this is what makes me laugh so hard, that all these people are supposed to protect you. The way I saw him pull a U-turn across, like, the grass ditch between highways, cut a guy off, and damn near hit another guy, it's just, like, let me tell you that, like, that wasn't safe at all. Only to pull over a woman with her two kids in a car on a plus 30 day, and he held me hostage for an hour and a half, would not let me get out of that car. With two little kids in the car, okay? So he pulls me over, okay? Tells me, I need a license, blah, blah, blah. I tell him I don't have it. I give him all the stops. I tell him, like, I don't do that, blah, blah, blah. Would not let me get away. Absolutely would not. I told him, like, you know, I tried to tell him about me being sovereign. I tried to tell him, like, I don't use my name anymore. I tried to tell him I've gone sovereign, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, I just need your juridical person, and I'm not going to let you go. This motherfucker, okay, this is the part that makes me mad. He stood there with a straight-ass face, and he told me to my face that I better get somebody to come down and get my kid, because he was about to haul my butt away to jail and hold me there indefinitely until he could identify who I was. And I got him to verify multiple times, indefinitely, like, you're going to hold me there for as long as it takes. And he's like, yep. I'm like, okay, can I get your sergeant on the phone? When I talked to the sergeant, same thing. They wouldn't let me tell him anything. They said, give your juridical person, because give your name, not your title, your name, specifically your name, because we're just going to deal with this in court. And I told his sergeant, you know, your officer just told me that they're going to bring me down and hold me indefinitely, right? And he's like, that's not what I said. That's not what I said. You must have misinterpreted me. No, sir. I know exactly what you said. And I wish I would have had a phone without a dead battery. Anyway, I called my friend Mika, and he's like, well, if you pulled all the stops, just give him your name. Give him your name. Because before all of this happened, I gave him my notarized ID that I had just gotten 6 days before. Okay? Before he started telling me all this corrupt shit and tried to, like, kidnap me and, like, hold me in death, all this other stuff, I gave him my notarized identification. He looks at it, flips it over, and he's like, this is what you got? I'm like, yeah. I came back to my car, and he told me his words, and I quote, I cannot write a ticket to this because it is not in our system. That's when
That's
he started
right.
pulling all this really... Exactly. I cannot write a ticket to this because it is not in our system. That's when he started pulling all these really fucking stops. And this is the real kicker, Richard. This is the real kicker. When my friend came down, because I was going to her house, so we were going to practice doing like a birthing class. We were going to go over things. She said she went to the officer's car, okay? She said when I gave him my ID, or not my, like, my name, He pulled everything up on the screen, and she said, okay, she saw my information according to my license on his screen. She saw my picture. She saw my name, except she saw everything on the screen. So after he wrote a ticket, okay, he came to me and he gave me a ticket with the wrong name, with the wrong address, in the wrong town. Okay, he gave me a ticket that was entirely somebody else. I actually went to Facebook and I Facebooked this woman's name, and it turns out she's a real person. She's a real individual. I found her, where she lived and everything. They gave me the wrong ticket. The only thing that was correct on that ticket was the car's previous owner and the car's previous information. He gave me the ticket. He said, do you need anything? I said, no, I do not. I'm good. He said, have a good day. He said, like, do you need me to take you anywhere? I said, no, I'm good. He said, okay, have a good day. And just like that, it was shown that if you are not in their system, if you do not have a contract with them, there is no commerce. I won that day. I won.
Okay, so you didn't go to court on that?
Nope. I didn't even need to go to court.
Because it was all of somebody else's information, not yours.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Wow.
And I know that they did that on purpose because my best friend had saw on their screen that they had my old information on their screen. So they purposefully wrote out the wrong ticket.
Okay. Okay, so they know.
They know.
Well, tell me this about the words not in service. Are you familiar with those? Is that part of what Canada does with motor vehicles?
No. No. So do explain.
Okay. In the U.S., when like a public transportation bus, you know, they're not working anymore. They're not picking up passengers. They're not in service. They have a sign that they start showing, right? It's electronic. Usually it's electric, electric light. And it says not in service, which means don't write us a ticket now because we're not in business. We're not in commerce at this point. So I have encouraged friends in the statewide Rural Assembly to use that kind of note, not in service, above their license plates so that they don't get tickets of any kind. And and one guy's been doing it for over a year, or maybe he's the one that's just short of a year, maybe 11 months, but it's close to a year. And he did get stopped once in a national park by a ranger. And when he saw the little sign over his plate that says not in service, he let him go. But so that's one avenue that people could use if that is a recognized feature of the Canadian Vehicle Code. I don't know. You need to look it up.
You know what? It wouldn't. Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up because that's really, really interesting. Because the second time that how much time do I have? Okay, I've got like 5 minutes here before our show is done. I'm going to go over this really quick. The second time I got pulled over, okay, I was going down the highway again. So, like, number one, learn the lesson. Don't go down the highway because you never know when a cop's going to come out of nowhere. Anyway, wee-woo, they pulled me over, okay? I told them, hey, listen, I'm sorry. And I'm on the phone with my best friend. Like, I'm literally on my phone with my headphones in. My phone is sitting on my lap, okay? So that should have been automatic ticket right there on top of driving without a license. Anyway, okay. Pulls me over, and he's just like, ma'am, you know, you're not supposed to be on the highway, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, okay. I was like, okay, officer. I was like, you know what? Here's the deal. I'm sovereign. I'm outside of have a system. And by this point, I had already sent in all my information, because before I just sent in my license. Now I have sent in all of my information, every single little bit of it, my health card, everything, social insurance number, anyway. And I was like, here's the deal. Okay, I'm sovereign. Here's my ID that I go by, my, you know, notarized identification. I said, if you need my name to write me a ticket, here you go. Because he starts arguing with me. He's like, you need to follow the rules here. You need to follow, you know, the rules of the road. We have laws here. And, like, the dude isn't even from here. He has, like, a thick accent. He's from Europe somewhere. I'm like, buddy, I grew up here. I know how these things go. And I'm like, listen, I'm not going to argue with you, dude. And so, like, you got to do your job. And I get that. You go ahead and you do your job. Write me a ticket, and we'll both be on our way, okay? Like, if you want to come by my place later, let's have a coffee and discuss this, that's perfectly fine. I was like, I know you're not going to want to argue with me. I don't want to argue with you. Here's my information, et cetera, et cetera. And it was cute because he came back, and my best friend can totally verify this on the phone. He came back, and he told me, ma'am, listen, your license expires next month, blah, blah, blah. You need to have that when you're going down, when you're on the roads here, blah, blah, blah. Here's what's funny about that story, okay? I had gotten rid of my license already 3 years prior. 3 years prior. 2 or 3 years prior was 2 years. Secondarily, when he told me my license expires in a month, totally wrong birthday. Not even the right birthday. It wasn't even the right birthday month. Number
he
one win again.
Giving that to you. He was just giving that to you. Great. I got it.
Yep. He was. Exactly. It was great. So it's like when you're saying it's not in service, it's like that's actually really interesting. Do you have any closing comments or anything for us today? Because we've got about 2.5 minutes here left.
No, I just want to wish Canadians all the best. And look up the original Uniform Vehicle Code. It's online. You can find it under the federal role in highway safety. Look that up online and read that. It's very interesting reading. It'll take you a couple days. It took me a few days to read through it, but it's a very interesting story about the beginnings of the vehicle code. Can you do that? Can you post that?
Yep. What's it called again?
The federal role in highway safety.
Let me go about here. Federal role in highway safety. Okay, I am going to go find that, and then I will post it in the show description.
Okay.
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 Sounds good. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show today. I appreciated the heck out of this conversation. It was very enlightening, and it's really awesome to see more and more people coming out of the woodwork and doing something about this. This is excellent. So thank you for coming.
All right. Thank you. You have a good one.
Yeah, you too. All right, everybody. We're going to catch you later. We will see you next Friday with my friend Pixie. So have a very happy, fun time Friday, and I will catch you guys later. Good night. Bye.